Bonneville.com/government. This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning, I'm John Elliott. I'll be your host today, at least until Bob Lyons gets here. He's stuck in traffic based on the storms of last night. If you're in the D.C. area listening, you know what I'm talking about, particularly if you're in Maryland or the district. Wasn't quite as bad in Virginia where I came from, so that's why I'm here on time. We're fortunate today to have Michael Herndon of ARP. He's the manager of financial security at that organization, and also we have Mary Liz Burns, also of ARP, who's the media chief.
No, not
did
quite, but...
Did I give you a promotion?
Sure.
So we're going to talk about retirement issues, not surprisingly, today. And let's start out with Michael. What do people have to think about when they're thinking about or preparing for retirement?
You know, when we talk about retirement at AARP, we often, I think people immediately go to the money. And one of the things that we do is often say, take a step back and look at retirement as what you want to do in life. Look at it sort of aspirational and say, okay, this is a period in my life that I can either reduce hours, stop working completely, change careers. There's a lot of things. So I think it's very important for people to look at retirement as sort of a life goal and not necessarily just a financial decision or a financial timing. Far too many people just sort of say, okay, I'm going to retire at 65, and that's retirement. I've got, you know, whether they have the money or not or anything.
Yeah. Some people, though, particularly in the federal community, are able to retire early. At least they're eligible to retire. That doesn't mean they should retire either financially or emotionally, but a lot of people are retiring historically in their 50s, although the average age for federal workers for a long time has been 61. And I think I read somewhere that that's the national average as well.
I believe it's beginning to go back up, actually, whether that's both for financial reasons that people need to keep working. And also both, I think we've seen some research that said that boomers especially have sort of decided to redefine later years so that they either want to keep working or feel engaged by it. I've still got a lot to give. So the age has started to come back up, the average retirement age. What an interesting fact, though, is if you look at when you ask retirees, a lot of them retire, well, I'll say a lot, a significant percentage retired before they plan to. So it's an issue sometimes that you may think, well, I'm going to retire at this particular age, 65, that seems good, or 50 or 55 or, you know, 60, where a potential disability comes along and suddenly you have to retire. Or you get to that closer to those years and you realize, oh, I left too much in stocks and the market took a big hit like we've just seen recently. And so maybe financially you need to work a few more years. So the age at which people think they're going to retire generally sometimes is off by either before or after. But in general, the retirement age is going back up a bit.
Mm-hmm. We're reading various reports in the media about kind of alarming news about people not saving enough for retirement or not realizing how much they are really going to need in retirement. And there are some websites with calculators to help you that. The thriftsavingsplan.gov, TSP.gov has a calculator to help you with that too. But apparently, if you can believe the media reports, there's this whole huge population out there that aren't putting away enough for retirement, whether that's their 401k or I'm not sure that's as much of a problem with the federal community with the TSP, Thrift Savings Plan, because they also have, of course, a defined benefit plan, FERS right. annuity, which is the pensions, and you would know this better than I, are a vanishing thing in the private sector. You're lucky if if you have one. And if you have one, it probably isn't indexed to inflation like the FERS annuity is, at least starting at age 62. And also, federal employees under FERS have Social Security component plus their thrift savings plan with 5% match, which is a pretty good system. A lot of private sector, just correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, or they have Social Security, of course, and then they may have a 401k. Maybe their employer contributes to it. Maybe they don't.
Right.
It just depends on who you work for and as to what your, you know, your financial picture or benefits look like.
Right. The in the private system, like you said, the number of companies offering pensions has really gone down over the years. It's reduced greatly. And even though the still about 50% of employers don't offer any kind of retirement plan at the workplace. So it's actually, I'm going to take that back. 50% of employees don't have access to a retirement plan at the workplace. So those that are lucky enough to have a pension, and I work for a great employer that offers a pension and a 401k, and so it makes me feel very confident that I'm going to reach my financial goals for retirement. But for a lot of Americans, like you said, they only have access to a 401k. The percentage of those who have access to a company that offers a match is even less. So federal employees are in a good place. My father was a federal retiree, and I know how well he was set for retirement through that and his own
probably
his own
under
hard work.
This old civil service retirement system.
He was.
Yes.
He was. And so he passed away, but my mom's in a very, very good sound shape.
With a survivor benefit.
Yeah.
Did she got full survivor benefits,
right.
Probably. Okay, well, that's we're a vanishing breed. I retired under CSRS in 2002, but as many of us realize, that any federal employee or congressman or staff, if they came into the government for the first time after 1983, are under the federal employees retirement system. You know, and there's a persistent rumor out there, you know, you get it from time to time, that federal that Congress isn't covered by Social Security. Totally false. They are now, and they have been since 1984, and as well as federal employees. I haven't heard that rumor so much about federal employees, but 75% of federal employees and climbing are covered under the newer. It's no longer new. It's been around since 1987, but if you came in after 1983, you were put in an interim plan, but that's for service. So that's the vast majority in climbing. Last time I checked, at least with Mike, our friend Mike Causey, friend of the show, was 75%. It might even be a little higher now, but obviously it's getting bigger all the time. So they're fully paying into Social Security, the 6.2%, which is what every red-blooded American pays into Social Security. So they're not treated that much differently, except they have this defined benefit plan and, of course, the matching funds. Before I go on, Bob Lyons, our usual host, who was stuck in traffic, as I said at the top of the show, because of the storms last night. How was that getting in, Bob?
It was bad, but I started listening to you about three blocks away. I figured I'd go back home.
Oh, well, we're glad you're here. No, we're glad you're here. And Bob is, in addition to being head of National Institute of Transition Planning, we do retirement seminars, and he's the founder. And it's what have we been in? You've been in business. I've only
close
been
close to 27 years.
27 years.
Yeah.
I've been with you about five. You created this whole thing. And but the other thing about Bob is that he's a certified public accountant, and he has a tax business and has had probably longer than 27 years.
42
years. So here's a great opportunity.
But who's counting?
In addition to asking our guest questions about retirement planning and concerns maybe about the future of Social Security, you also get your tax questions answered for free. It is still free, isn't it, Bob?
Always.
Yeah, on the show, at least.
On the show
our number,
and email us.
Our number has changed, I'm told. It's now 202-465-3080. So if you'd like to call in with a question with our guest, Michael, or Mary Liz, or Bob, or even me.
Even me.
Well, my expertise is federal benefits,
yeah.
So, you know, there's a reason I'm here as well. And I'm a seminar presenter as well.
And a whiz kid at it, and a retired Fed, and if you hadn't said that before.
I said I retired under CSRS, so I guess they got that. Also, I'm the spouse of a recently retired Fed. So, you know, I'll be happy to talk about that experience recently as of March of this year. So,
well, when I was coming in, I just got out of the car when y'all came on, and we were talking about kind of getting real with retirement dollars. I didn't hear much between that and when I just walked in. But when you work with folks, do you try to project out what they're going to need in retirement first and then go second to where that's going to be funded, or how do you work it?
Well, and in our role at ARP, we don't work directly with our members to say, you know, you're ready for retirement. We're speaking to them sort of generally and providing all information in all kinds of ways, whether it's through our publications or our website or our state offices doing a lot of work, you know, on the ground. What we do say generally is that people too often retire because it feels right. They literally, it's sort of the feels right to me. I'm 65. I'm supposed to retire, and they don't really think about the money. Federal retirees are, again, we'd said, probably a little bit better off because they have such a good, solid retirement program. But for a lot of Americans, they don't. Not quite, you know, to that zone. But I would say for federal employees, one of the issues is, well, why are you retiring? Is it because you just feel like retiring? Is it because you think you're supposed to? Do you feel like you can't contribute anymore? What are the sort of emotional reasons to deciding it's time to retire? And I would also say that it impacts the spouse. If you decide to retire, the spouse is a number of years younger than you, possibly that financially you're not ready, but you think, well, my spouse retired, I should too. You really need to sit down and think about it emotionally and also financially.
In our seminars, we do, of course, what John speaks about, federal benefits, Social Security, and then we do tax and finance. And on the third day, we do have a section, the psychological side of retirement. You know, all of a sudden, not everybody's married, but this person is going to be around all day in my turf.
Right.
And then we talk about the slow landing into retirement. Work at it before you retire. You just don't retire and then say, well, I'll play golf or right. I'll go sail. Well, that gets old after a while. And then, gee, I want to go back to work.
Right.
So that. But on the money side, not to dwell on the money side, but yep. I really like you have a calculator on choosetosave.com, even though it's, you know, the ballpark estimate is probably with all due respect, the most well-known projector. But yours, if you drill down into yours, it really gets more into the nitty-gritty. Where is this stuff going to come? Where am I spending my money?
Right.
And then where is it going to come from? And I kind of like that.
The calculators, we have a good deal of experience at ARP in trying to say, what can we do that helps people get a general sense of where they are and ready for retirement? And a lot of the calculators, they can be very simple. You can just put in a very few numbers and it spits out a very general number. The only problem with that is people say, well, but my situation is a little bit different. I have this going on or that going on. So then we tried to build calculators that are a little more in depth. Well, you start doing that and it gets a little more complicated and it starts to getting more. You have to, well, what's the inflation rate going to be? Well, the vast majority of people don't know what the inflation rate is today, much less what it's going to be 10 years from now and those kinds of things. So the retirement calculators, you'll see a number of them that are very general, that will give you a general number. And then you see them a little bit more complex that talk about what are your expenses, how do you factor in medical expenses, those kinds of things. I would encourage every listener to play with them, just sort of go in, and they're not financial planning software. So don't expect that you're going to get a very exact answer, but you know, use it to get some sense, kind of like those longevity calculators. It's sort of fun to say, hey, my grandmother lived to be 100, you know, and I've never smoked. What generally, you know, what does it say that it might happen for me? I would say that the retirement calculators are good ways to do that.
Give
for
us
the
that
money.
That address again, that website address for that calculator. Get your pencils ready.
AARP.org/money, okay. M-O-N-E-Y, is where all of the kinds of financial things you'll be able to find information on. Social Security, the retirement calculators, other calculators too. So we have some things about getting out of debt and those kinds of things. All of AARP's resources on money are at money, aarp.org/money.
Okay, so you call yourself AARP, not ARP, like I've been calling. I apologize for that. AARP.
AARP.
Not a problem.
What does that stand for? I know, but...
In our history, it started off as the American Association of Retired Persons, but like many organizations and companies, we simply go by the initials now, AARP.
And also because over half our members are still working, either full-time or part-time, so the the name retired doesn't mean that same as it did even 20 years ago.
Right.
Well, I joined ARP despite the fact that I was a federal employee and retiree, because I'm kind of in this business, and I get your bulletin, which is chock full of useful information. I have one in front of me now, and not to mention your magazine, mm-hmm. plus all those discounts.
Right.
So, yeah, I found it very useful over the years.
And one of the things that we're just, you know, we're trying to stay up with the times. We're beginning to do some web presentations for members, so that membership might get you into, you know, sitting in on a webinar about what are some tax strategies for, you know, in very broad tax strategies or very broad, you know, how do I think about retirement? You know, what age is good for me? Maybe some, you know, how would I generate income in retirement? So that's another benefit that we offer that I think is a great service.
Yeah, and getting back to calculators in general, certainly yours, but there are others. The TSP.gov mm-hmm. has a great calculator. The ballpark estimator at OPM.gov for federal right. annuities, both SERS and FERS, is another source. And Social Security has a calculator at their website, and I think we imported their Social Security calculator as well as the TSP calculator at our website, natpinc.com. My point is going to be, and always is, and I stress this in our seminars, that you got to take advantage of these calculators. They're an indispensable tool to financial planning or retirement planning. And if you don't, you're flying blind. And they're, as you pointed out, Michael, they're fun to use. But mm-hmm. they're also, you learn an incredible amount of useful information.
I think one of the key things that we stress to people is that you may see a balance in your 401k or your TSP. And it may say $300,000. And for a lot of people, that's the biggest sum of money they've ever seen attached to their name, and maybe will ever see attached to their name. What they can hopefully do with a calculator is then see, well, what does that mean as far as income? Oh, I didn't realize. I was thinking I was going to live to be like my grandmother did to 100. That $300,000 doesn't go as far as I thought it would. So I think the calculators can help you sort of manipulate a lot of things that you know and you may think or assume, and then and understand it in a little bit better perspective.
Yeah, and just an example, and we have this example in our seminar, so I've by now learned it by heart. If you have $500,000 in your thrift savings plan account, and the same would be true of 401k, and you want to withdraw $3,000 a month or $36,000 a year, well, fine, how long is that going to last? And you'd have to assume a rate of return, but if you assume a reasonably conservative 6%, mm-hmm. that's going to last 30 years. But, of course, a lot of people, particularly in the future, as we're told, are going to be living to be on one of Willard Scott Smucker's jars someday. You have to be 100. For those of you who catch his bit on the Today Show, and I'm almost everybody has by now, because he's been doing it forever. So maybe 30 years isn't enough.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's better to find out before you retire than after you retire.
There's a number of people you will see who retire simply because, like I said, it feels right. They retire and then literally figure out the money after that. And they realize very quickly that, oh, I didn't have nearly enough money. In fact, we were involved in a program a few years ago, a TV special, and it featured a gentleman who that happened. He retired, sort of figured out the money later, and he literally had to sell off a prized gun collection and go back to work because he just didn't have enough money.
Yeah, that I heard a story from a financial planner years ago. This was goes way back into the early 80s when treasury bonds were paying 15%. So he had about $500,000 invested in treasury bonds or something, maybe more than that. But at any rate, the point it was, he figured, well, I can just live off the interest, 15%. Well, then if you can remember that far back, the interest rates a couple of years later dropped like a stone, and all of a sudden he couldn't live on the interest anymore, and he was dipping into that principal.
Right.
So it's you've really got to be careful and really think about these things. And it doesn't hurt to read things like not only your publications, but Wall Street Journal. And if you can't abide that, then at least the business section of your local paper and CNBC. So there's a lot of sources where you can educate yourself as well. And, of course, you're chief among them. That's one of your...
Right. And the federal government, I'm familiar with OPM's efforts. The federal government is actually a very good employer when it comes to financial education.
Yeah,
they've
OPM,
really taken that to heart. OPM and
the last two couple of decades has done a really good job at attempting to get information out there to their employees and the people who are supposed to be counseling their employees. I can't see anything they could be doing that they're not currently doing, and they've recently started. If you get on their email list, which I would recommend, readiness tips from our friend Ray Kirk.
Yep, I know.
And you know, at various topics, it's not just financial, and it's the other side. You know, the psychological or social or emotional, whatever you want to call it, side as well, which I know you're interested in. You don't just stop at the water's edge with financial matters. You also go into, let's say I've really taken a good hard look at my retirement income, and I can do this. You know, I've even gone to a financial planner, which is always a pretty good idea. And my accountant or my financial planner said, yeah, you can do this financially, but you're not done with your analysis yet, are you?
No, and I think one thing that we also stress is that you do it in, if you have a spouse, in partnership with that spouse, to say, what are our retirement goals? What do we envision that we're going to be doing in retirement? We've done a story at one point in one of our publications about the fact that people don't sort of match up the retirement expectations until it's a little late. So just like you do in a lot of things, and people are, I think, a little more hesitant to talk about money, but as far as the emotional sides and what they want to do, that's obviously something they've got to take into account. And, you know, whether they're going to, one wants to garden and one wants to travel, and I think you kind of know that about your spouse, but then just sort of the expectations about what kind of, you know, how active would you be in retirement, those sorts of things.
John, Have you noticed more younger people in your pre-retirement seminars as, let's say, in the last couple of years, and they look more mid-career types than they do pre-retirement? And I don't know about you. I go up to them at the break and not say, well, like, what are you doing here? And I say, what are you doing here? And to almost to the person, it's, I don't want to mess up like the other people. Not that the other people have messed up, but they want to know now so that they can do something. Somebody sitting there with 4 or 5 or 3 years to go can do something, but not as much as somebody 15 years away.
Yeah, I've noticed that. But I would argue that, or comment, not argue, that there are not enough young people. The best time to start retirement planning is almost after you walk in the door, particularly in the private sector, where chances are, this is the norm, where your retirement's going to be dependent on your 401k. So you need to know, I got to start investing now and start using some of these calculators we talked about, not 5 years before you're ready to retire,
right,
as soon as you start working. And the same is true of the federal community, because so much is dependent on the Thrift Savings Plan. And that can be half to, if you're fortunate, over half of your retirement income. We would love to see people, you know, as soon as they can, starting their career, get into a seminar and start educating themselves about these matters. Because, if you look at the figures, if you just postpone investing in your 401k or TSP, whatever it is, for 5 years, do nothing for 5 years, and then you say, whoops, I better start, and you do it faithfully and contribute a significant amount for 25 years, yeah, you'll have a nice pot of money. But if you compare that, and this is where the calculators come in, if you say, if I'd started at the beginning and did 30 years, I mean, the results will make you sick.
Right.
Unless you started when you should have. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars difference in your retirement plan. It's kind of an illustration of Einstein's miracle. Albert Einstein, the mathematician, not the comedian, Albert Brooks, but the mathematician. Obviously, Brooks changed his name. But anyway, he said there are two miracles in life, and I can never remember the second, but one was the miracle of compounding interest that works for you as well as against you. So, it's absolutely essential.
One of the things
to start early.
At AARP have been very supportive of is this idea of automatic enrollment. And that's an odd term for 401ks now are becoming, and I think it's about 40% of employers offer a 401k where the participation in a 401k is that you opt out, right? You know, it used to be that you had to sign the forms and do all this paperwork to get it and pick the funds. And for a lot of people, they wanted to save, they wanted to do it. It just was very confusing to them. So there was this bright idea to say, well, let's just put people into this benefit and let them change it if they want out. At any time, you can say, I don't want to be in it. The TSP, actually, I believe it works this way as well. So that as you start with a company, they'll send you the notices. We're going to put you in at this percent into these funds. Unless you don't like that, you can change it at any time. And the vast majority of people, and it's participation rates of like 80, 90% for a lot of these firms.
Yeah.
People say, oh, okay, fine. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you're helping me do it because you just go right in. And what we're doing is getting those 5 years that people would not have had otherwise.
Right.
And that later on, when they start really paying attention to those account balances, they, gosh, I'm so glad that my company did that and I got in years ago.
Yeah. And younger people should be, this is conventional wisdom, feel free to disagree, but should be heavily invested in stocks.
Oh, certainly, yes. I mean, over time, you know, there's an appropriate amount of stocks you should be invested in, and then you become more conservative as you age. So, and again, the automatic enrollment typically will put you into a target date fund, which, you know, there's a lot of issues about target date funds and the fees, but on the very good flip side is that you go into a fund and it's going to do that for you over time. So even the allocation part of it is set up for you.
Yeah, for us, the federal community, it's the L Fund, which started in 2005. So they're about 5 years old. And the Thrift Savings Plan did not invent life cycle funds.
Right.
That's what it stands for. They were available elsewhere. But they imported the idea into the TSP, which is, and it was designed for people, and this is probably most people, that A, aren't sophisticated investors or stock pickers, and that's almost everybody.
Right.
And the second, that don't consult a financial planner. And that's a big number, too. I'm guessing a majority. And so the L Fund, and I think the 401ks have this concept, too, in many mm-hmm. cases. I think that's what you're talking about. Manages it for you. And, you know, if you're younger, you want to be in the most aggressive growth one. That is maybe that starts out 85% stocks. But then over each quarter, they move a little bit into the more conservative bond funds, literally each quarter on the first day of the start of each quarter. This TSP, I'm not speaking of generally. But over time, without you doing anything, as you get closer to your time horizon, whether that's retirement or whenever you decide it is for you, because some people won't start drawing on their TSP immediately at retirement. Whatever that time horizon is, you'll end up flipping it almost maybe 80% bonds and 20% stocks, which leads me to another point. Is 20% stocks in retirement, assuming you could, like many, will live 30, 40 years in retirement, is that being too conservative too early, do you think?
I will let the CPA maybe take a crack at some of that. From our perspective, I don't know the exact numbers, and I'm not a financial planner. I know a lot about financial planning and about financial planners, but I think there is a risk of being too short in stocks in retirement in order to keep up with inflation and to stay up with the longevity. I think that there's a risk that a lot of people don't consider.
So what we do, and John and I, we had a guest on one day, and they said, if you're going to retire in 2020, don't do the 2020 fund, do the 2030 fund. Am I remembering right, John?
Yeah. One of the financial planners we use, Karen Schaefer, I guess I can give her credit, I started out in the 2020 fund, based on when I would start taking minimum distributions out of my TSP. And she said, wait a minute, You could live to be, well, she didn't literally say live to be on one of Willard Scott Smucker's jars, but the implication was right. I live, you know, another, I was 60 at the time, a few years ago. And she said, you could live another 30, 40 years. And the 2020 fund, which I started out at 65% stocks, 35% bonds, that was 5 years ago. It's more bonds now. She said, you're being too conservative too early. So she recommended I be in the most aggressive one, which is the 2040 fund, which started out 85% stocks, 15% bonds. It's now about 80-20 as we speak. And it made instant sense to me. And I think she's probably right. And, oh, Warren Buffett was on TV helping his son, who has written a book, Flack his book. But at the end, they asked Warren, Mr. Buffett, I suppose I should call him. They asked Warren Buffett, can you give us one bit of investment advice in the last few seconds we have? And he said, without hesitation, pick a stock fund, a stock index fund, like the S&P 500 or another type of stock fund, and let it ride for 20 years. Now, not everybody has 20 years. The older crowd may not, but many do, even in retirement. That was his advice. And he's done pretty well, yep, as we all know. So pick a stock index fund and let it ride for 20 years. That's not to say you shouldn't have some bonds, but I think most financial planners I've heard, they may vary the percentage, but I think one relatively well-known financial planner, I won't name him because I don't know, it's been several years since I heard him say this, so I may have it wrong, but he recommended at least 40% in equities in retirement, or stocks in retirement, just to keep up with inflation, right, as you pointed out.
And for a lot of people, these are all generalized, you know, funds are generalized to your, how risky do you like to be? Some people sort of say, you know, I'm only going to put money into an investment account like that, that I could literally lose. If I lose it all, I'm still going to be fine. So they feel like they can be a little bit more risk tolerant with that because maybe they have a large inheritance and this big pension coming to them.
Yeah.
So to them, it's sort of play money. To others, they're so worried and that they just don't sleep well at night unless they're much more conservatively invested. So again, what's really good about a planner is that the planner can give you some rules of thumb, but then if you can meet with an individual financial professional of some type that can give you some guidance, and you can say, you know, I just don't sleep well when I think I might lose it. Okay, for you, we're going to do it a little bit differently or something like that.
Yeah. The stock funds and the thrift, though, the C funds are the Standard & Poor's, the big American companies, right? The 500 biggest.
500 largest U.S. corporations.
Spread out over the different industries. And then they have a smaller cap. It's called it's S fund. C fund, common stocks, S fund, smaller common stocks. And then they have international, an I fund. And so they have different funds within the TSP group.
Right.
And then they have a bond fund, oddly enough, called the F fund for fixed income. And then what's the last one? G fund, which is all government, which is, you know, of its variety, can't be beaten.
Well, you can't lose money in the G fund. You always make some amount of money. So it's super safe. The other bond fund, the F fund, is about half corporate bonds. And so you could lose money, but it almost never has. It's always...
And bonds will travel in the inverse direction. A lot of people just don't understand that. If interest rates are going up, bond values are going down. Doesn't mean the bond's going to go bad. It just doesn't have as much value. So the F fund has done extremely well in the last year and a half or so because it had locked in at higher rates. Interest rates went down. It had more value. It doesn't mean that they're going to pay any more interest. It's just if you wanted to sell at that date, you could sell at a profit. I'm not saying you should, but it's totally inverse to what people would normally think. Interest rates going up, that's good. Not if you have a 10 or 15 or 30 year bond. Mm-hmm. For value, you'll still get your interest on the bond. And the G fund, I've always thought, is phenomenal. It's demand money. So in other words, it's not like a CD or a bond where you have to keep it for a period of time. You want to move it from the G fund to whatever other fund, move it. And it pays a pretty decent rate of interest for demand money.
Michael, do you get any... this is a common mistake our community, the federal community, makes, or too many people in the federal community make in investing in the stock market, is they buy high and sell low rather than buy low, sell high, as you should be doing. Do you find that as generally a problem among the people you come in contact with?
I would say not, in that people aren't really looking at it as they're trying to grow their investment on their own. The majority of people that we focus on and that we speak to are participating in the 401k. So it's not a matter of looking at the individual stocks and stock picking. That's not generally the people that we're trying to address. We're trying to, you know, just reach the people that, you know, have a job, have a way to save at work. If they don't, you know, there's a lot of things that we at AARP think that could help them, in certain things that are out in Congress possibly that could help them get some money into the stock market. But it's going to be much more, you know, the very broad universal fund, you know, these target date funds and things like that. I think that people who are sort of looking to do their own investment like that are typically people that are going to either have the resources to at least initiate that, and then certainly are certainly much more risk tolerant and, you know, and aren't paying attention to our advice too much.
Yeah, the people under the older system, particularly the civil service retirement system, can be, I think, and certainly more risk tolerant because they've got this pretty good, well, I think very good, defined benefit plan indexed to inflation, which is a big thing. So they can afford to be a little more adventurous in terms of higher percentage in stocks than maybe their FERS counterparts. That's not to say you young FERS and mid-career FERS, you need to still be heavily in the market, stock market. But I'm talking about maybe the retired FERS versus the SERS FERS. Maybe the SERS retirees can be a little more adventurous. That's why it didn't take Karen Schaefer but 30 seconds to convince me. I bought it right away to get in the highest growth but highest risk 2040L fund a few years ago because I'm a SERS. I've got that SERS pension.
And I would recommend that people look at their costs in retirement that are absolute must, that you can't go without. Consider the guaranteed expenses you are going to counter in retirement. You've got to have a place to live. You've got to eat. You've got to pay your medical bills and energy. And then if you've got the luxury of sort of the additional investments, consider that to be the sort of how well you did in that year. And you might take a big vacation next year because you really did well in the stock market, but leave that totally open to the sort more flexible cost, and then leave that, you know, more fortunate to use your flexible accounts for flexible spending. And so if 1 year that doesn't pay off, then okay, we're going to do a staycation here at home this year and see some of those museums that we never go to in DC. But then next year, you know, oh, I did great. We're going to go to, Florida in the winter.
Yeah. And that all speaks to, before you retire, you want to look at what would we like to do in retirement? Do we want to travel? And are we going to be able to afford to do the traveling we want to do? Or whatever it is, you know, what kind of a lifestyle do we want to have in retirement?
And a good financial planner, I think, will help people when they first meet with a planner. The planner's not going to talk about the money. They're going to say, what do you want to do? What's the life you want to live? And they help. My experience and understanding of planners is they really help people envision that and set it out. And then they start talking about, okay, what is the financial plan to get there? So I think that whether you meet with a hands-on financial planner or just use some of the resources at aarp.org/money that might help you set out that life you want and figure out what kind of resources you would need to achieve it.
Yeah, it probably would be a good idea, it seems to me, to be as educated as possible before you go see that financial planner, because the more you know, the more he or she can help you.
Right.
So if they go to aarp.org and maybe start educating themselves using the calculators and then then writing down their questions, so they'll get a much better start with a financial planner, it seems to me,
and
if they do their homework.
We have on the website, I'm not going to give you the exact, you know, there's a URL a mile long if you start getting into it, but if you look for aarp.org/money, the resources we have there is what questions to ask a financial planner. When you go in to work with a professional, you know, is this person going to rip me off? Is this person licensed to do what they're saying they're going to do? So we can provide you with not only the things you need to know to go into retirement, but the things you might need to talk to the people that are going to help you with retirement. Unfortunately, a lot of seniors, or a lot of people, you know, in later life are targeted. For one, they have the assets. They have the $300,000 next to your name. That seems like a lot of money. You're trying to figure out what to do with it. Well, there's somebody out there that wants a chunk of that $300,000 through not-so-honorable ways. So we do a lot about investor protection to say, here's how you can go forward with that money. You don't want to, you know, it's as much as you need all of it. So we're going to try to help you keep as much of it as you can.
Yeah, it seems to me in your publication, either the bulletin or the magazine, one of the two, if not both, you have addressed that subject of fraud, and that that the older, our older citizens are, you know, a prime target for that, and maybe fall prey to some crook more readily than maybe younger people, and well, I've never quite understood why that is.
I think there are a number of things that come into play. One, again, the because there's so many assets there, that the people who are out to commit fraud, they understand the tactics that are going to work for that population. So one, they employ just certain tactics that work for anybody, you know, just high pressured. If you don't buy it today, you're going to miss out on this opportunity. They have the opportunity to, you've got the time when you're not at work, the workplace, you're sort of, you know, you've got the time to go to a particular event, you know, and take up the day to go to hear somebody that says, oh, I've got this great offer for you. And then I think also you've got people who may be in a particular financial decision point. They're at retirement, so they've got to do something with the money. They've just lost a spouse, so they've got to do something about the money. So you've got a lot of people who are in transition. So you've got people who are stressed out, in transition, a big pot of money. You know, it's almost the perfect storm for a lot of this to happen. So I think that's a lot of what's going on.
Yeah, speaking of stress, retirement, I've read over the years, is one of the top 10 stressors that we deal with in life. And, you know, and it's not just financial, it's maybe emotional. And I think that's what we're talking about when we talk, one of the top 10 stressors in your life is retirement. Do you ever address that?
We do address that in some of the research that we've done and the publications are in the materials that we put out about how to navigate this big change in your life. You're redefining yourself. I am no longer an accountant. I am no longer an architect. I'm a retired architect. Well, what do you do? Well, I get up in the morning and I read the paper and you're not just sort of still sketching buildings. So I think that's a big, it's a stressor in somewhat that you have to come up with a new definition for yourself. You have to, it's stressful to sort of think, okay, I've got a lot of decisions to make. Where are we going to live? Is this money going to last it? Am I making a decision that's irreversible? If you claim Social Security, you can't go back in some of these situations and reclaim it because you realized you may should have made this decision some other time. So I think it is just, you know, in general, lots of reasons stressful.
Yeah, and I think certainly for people who are identify themselves by their profession or job, and in the law enforcement community, we see that too. And I'm guessing the firefighters and police, well, I said law enforcement, but I think it's, I've encountered people that feel general anxiety after retirement that weren't necessarily didn't identify themselves as this was my profession.
Right.
So even for that crowd, which is maybe more than the other side, they also sometimes, not always, may feel some anxiety saying, why am I anxious? I got no worries. And these are people with no money worries.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard. They sit there. Why am I, you know, having to go to the doctor and get a prescription anxiety medication?
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen that, and at least anecdotally, I don't have any studies. You know,
very anecdotally, my father, who was fortunate to be a federal retiree, there was a I could see some change in them, and because he was very much of a very dedicated, very hard worker, as all federal employees are, a very good worker, and worked hard all of his life. And when he retired, he wanted to go cold turkey. And he went very much cold turkey onto the golf course. And it was just, I could notice changes in him, and I sort of just attributed it to, okay, you know, he's retired now, so this has changed him somewhat. He's really redefined himself, and I think did a good job of it, but, you know, things that I would never have thought he would have done, and, you know, built a bigger house and then moved to a smaller house, and just changes that I would thought he would have stayed through. But I do believe that it can happen. And then also at that time in life, I think, you know, you may be losing a lot of people are losing parents at that age. If you're fortunate, my mother was fortunate enough to be in her 60s before her parents died. So I think it's just so much change going on. You're moving to a new place. You're retiring. Family dynamics are changing. You're not defining yourself by your, I'm the wife of this businessman, but now we're just retired, two retired people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely, you've got to watch out for the levels of anxiety. And, you know, we're not saying don't retire, but at least be aware that this could happen to you. You know, it's not all necessarily a bed of roses. It is for many, and we hope it is. But you've got to recognize before you pull the plug, because that's hard to unring that bell once you've retired. I mean, someplace, if you're lucky, your agency or company will say, yeah, we miss you, come on back.
Yeah.
But more often than not, that isn't the case. So you need to think about these emotional issues and not just the obvious financial ones.
Obviously, it's not a bit of not buyer's remorse, but you know, when you first buy a car, you think, oh, am I making the right decision? Or buying a house is stressful because it's such a big financial decision. And I'm sure a lot of that holds true for retirement. It's just like another big financial purchase or decision. So that, of course, it's going to be full of stress.
So, John, what did you do when you retired? Go right back out and start teaching?
No, I first of all, I decided, well, I retired at the end of June. And I said, I'm going to take the summer off and go back to the time, feel like when I was a kid and I had summers off during school. So then that summer stretched into almost a year before I went back and did my first seminar. So I've been retired 8 years, but 7 out of 8 I've been doing retirement seminars and answering emails. And what else do I do? Oh, this.
And now I'm going to retire.
You're going to retire.
From the show.
Oh, no, you're not. No, no, no.
Now, have you thought about that decision, or are you just making it
I heard John's intro, and I go,
How about the anxiety you're about ready to produce there as well?
Well, I still consider myself the Joan Rivers to your Johnny Carson. I'm just the guest host today.
Neither Jay Leno nor Conan O'Brien are sitting to your left here.
Well, you're certainly, you could be. And I haven't had the facial work that Joan has.
Okay.
I hasn't had.
One thing I would say is that the current recession is really, I want to applaud the point you made where we need to be talking about financial education and literacy. We're finding that a lot of our members, they have children that have moved home with them. The first time, maybe they didn't expect it, that they got out of college, couldn't find a job, they're moving in. They're staying at home longer. They can't find a job. So their outlook in terms of retirement savings or just getting out of college debt is going to be extended so much longer that parents are being many times forced to also work even longer than they thought because they have to continue to support their children. And what we try to do at ARP is that conversation should be intergenerational. It should begin as soon as possible. I'm working with our school systems. We've done some work there as well. But it is trying to become as realistic as possible for the kinds of things like this recession brought on, which is that if you do have a lot in stocks, if you retired at the wrong time, you took a big hit and you're still trying to figure out what you're doing with the lost savings. You've got your Social Security, but that's never been the only retirement that people can count on, although there's 30 to 40% of Americans today on Social Security only have Social Security. So although the listeners to this show may have somewhat of a different portfolio, a different outlook, they've got family members, too. They're going through the same kind of struggles. And I think if this recession could do anything, it should be a legacy on financial education. Let's have that national dialogue we need to have about what retirement security really means.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the returning children. You know, they may graduate from college, but even a college degree, as we're finding out, is in a tough job market, makes it difficult to find a job. And so they may, you know, they're returning home for a while, and we hope, and most kids don't want to live at home, but that's another consideration in your retirement planning, in particularly in a down market. I have a neighbor whose son is about in his 30s and still never left home, and he has a job, but that may be for a variety of other reasons, but I don't know. But yeah, we've been hearing about that syndrome for a number of years, even before the Great Recession, of the returning. You know, you thought you were an empty nester, and you kind of assumed you would be, because you never really thought, oh, they're going to return. They might return home. So right. That's a factor.
And something else that we've dealt with in the past is the issue people retire and they have a certain budget and a plan. And one night, literally, the grandchildren show up on the door, and that the mother has left the children there to say, you take care of them, I'm running off. And it's an extreme situation, but you know, in life, nothing's going to be certain, and that some people are saying, goodness, all this, I'm responsible for my grandchild now. So if it's a child coming back who couldn't get a job in college, it's something like a, you know, grandchildren that show up that suddenly you're financially responsible for. It's a lot of, you know, variances in life. So that's one of the reasons that we think, you know, good planning, discussing it, what would you want to do if the children needed to be there, all those kinds of discussions, I think, are very important for people to begin.
Yeah, and oftentimes, the children don't want to be there either.
Right.
They just have to be because either they can't find a job, particularly in today's market, or they can't find a job that pays them enough where they can go out and afford an apartment, or they can't find a roommate to share the expenses right away. So there's a whole, you know, there's a whole variety of issues that are beyond, and that is can be a financial issue for you as well, but certainly an emotional issue that may circumscribe your retirement and your retirement plans. Because
right.
If you're retired, you're going to be home. And if they don't have a job, they're going to be home. And I'm sure that creates some tension, even though you may love your kids and so forth
right.
and so on, even in the best of circumstances. Well, we're down inside of a minute. Any final thoughts? Any recommendations for you?
I would just go back to the idea of using a calculator. You know, just sort of take that one step. If you're looking at thinking about retirement, just, you know, take a simple calculator. Take that sort of action, I think, will really open up a lot of possibilities for you. And maybe the good start of the discussion to talk about what you want to do with children and estate plans and all of that. I think it's a good starting point for lots of discussions that can take
excellent
place.
Excellent advice. But, well, I think we're about out of time. So we'll say bye-bye.
Bye, John.
Bye, Bob. Bye, Michael. Thank you. Bye,
You've
Mary
been
Liz.
Listening
Thank
to
you.
For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.